Good afternoon, Rand. How are you?
I am quite well. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you very much. Very good. Delighted to be back in touch with you. And you're looking quite dapper. And remind all our viewers where, in fact, we're talking to. I am, of course, calling you from London Blackheath in the UK.
Well, I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's a big financial hub over here. It's Bank of America. It's located here. Wells Fargo's Eastern Division is located here. So we end up with a lot of financial services, a lot of trading and stuff like that in Charlotte.
Fabulous. And to introduce you to all my lovely viewers and to give them the full insight of who we're speaking to, Rand is a practicing performance coach in essence, but it was a counselor stroke therapist by history and training. But as always, rather than the Band-Aid approach, in terms of what many people associate with therapists, is highly focused on performance with specific reference to trading, which brings us to why we'd be wanting to speak to you today. Have I done that justice, Rand? Anything to add?
Oh, excellent. It's actually very good. What I would say is that I've been a professional therapist for 25 years, and it's been focused on performance. And most of my work is centered in emotional intelligence, where we're looking and understanding that emotion comes first and thought comes out of emotion. And it's actually, if you want to build a mind, what you do is you recognize it's through emotion that you build the base of where the mind comes from. And once you grasp that, everything is completely different. In trading, you would notice the difference, like when people are sitting there, have problems pulling the trigger. And what happens is they look for confirmation, then more confirmation, and the trade's gone. What you're looking at is thinking that comes out of anxiety.
Yeah.
And at the same time, if you've ever seen someone get angry when a trade goes against them and they get angry and they start having really hostile thoughts about getting back at the markets and things like that, you see thinking coming out of anger. So you begin to say, wow. It's really about our emotional nature that you need to be at rather than trying to change thoughts, because the thought's already been there.
I love this, Rand, and this is great, great content. Basically, what you're saying is the tree grows out of the soil, where the soil is the emotion, and you think the tree being the logic is the tree as standalone, but it is based and housed within that which it gets its sustenance from. And every plant comes from the base of an emotion. Every thought comes from a base of emotion. We're going to get into all of this, but before we go too much into the content, I want to first make everybody aware this book is moving into Francis Hunt's must read book for aspirant and existing intermediate and advanced traders. This book is called The Mindful Trading: Mastering Your Emotions and the Inner Game. Mastering Your Emotions and the Inner Game. It is an excellent read. I own it. I am in the process of completing reading it. I've already read a large part of it. And Rand is the author thereof. And by the way, Rand, with regards to the book, best place is actually your website. It's not available on Amazon. As someone who is a good citizen and is undermining the multi-corporatocracy oligarchy, you are reserving your intellectual property for those that find their way to your website. And is there any other venue? A website is the chosen destination for purchase?
That is the place. My Trader's State of Mind.
Excellent. And My Trader's State of Mind being exactly that place. And a mail out, is there any place you won't send the book? In other words, globally?
No, we prefer when it's outside the United States, our preference is that you get the ebook version because it just makes it so easy.
Yeah.
We actually have more problems sending the hard book to Canada than we do to the UK. We don't know what happens in Canada. We really don't. It's a mystery. But we will send the books anywhere there's a postal service.
The UK is nothing if it's not a red pillar box post office nation, Rand. I can tell you that much. Excellent. Right. Well, without further ado, we're planning a series. It's worth making clear to everybody. This is the first, and we're going to get into some really awesome material. But this is actually a series. When we had our structured discussion, we realized there's too much amazing content. And more importantly, this is potentially a seed that's going to highlight to people what an immense journey the actual emotional management side is of trading. You know, people think that's the soft stuff. Yeah, yeah, you've got to sort of control your mood and your temper. Yeah, yeah, okay, what are we trading? Indicators, what's the deal? What's the methodology? Straight into that. Now, I come as a trader and I focus technically, which incorporates a lot of methodology, and I've had to retrospectively go back and revalue the event that I'm an emotional being that has made many mistakes emotionally. And Rand is coming from that side, not from the methodology and trading side, but to someone who values and has worked with multiples of traders who've then gone on to achieve far higher levels of success once they've learned to manage. And everything can be learned. Am I correct saying, Rand, we aren't born emotionally good at managing emotions, but it is something that is totally can be learned? Yes.
Oh, absolutely can be learned. And it's actually necessary. When you take a look at really good athletes, you will see talent and technique taught all the way up. But when you get to the higher echelons, when you're looking at like the PGA Tour and you're looking at like the top 10 golfers, they all have sports psychologists there. They all are going through it because what they recognize is that everybody there can drive. Everybody there can putt. But on any given situation under pressure, can you make the shot?
So given a certain emotional environment, whether it be pressure, whether it be you're in an anxious moment, you're not feeling as balanced, there could be many reasons, internal and external. The guy that consistently wins is the person who can bring to bear his techniques that everyone typically has at that high level, consistently in any mixed emotional environment, including having to make the last putt on the 18th hole after, you know, four or five rounds, whatever the total is. That is the sort of the real pressure moment that everyone would refer
it's
to.
It's literally your response to stress, your response to the challenges of the moment. And if you have an untrained mind, there's going to be some moment where the brain interprets that challenge, that stress, as something that's a threat to organism, a threat to the organization itself, and it will trigger to fight flight, and there's your fear, there's your anger taking over and absolutely contaminating performance. Whereas the person who really has begun to develop emotional intelligence, which is a learnable deal, is you begin to recognize, I need to anticipate that, I need to build the mind for that particular moment. And it's not done by willpower, it's done by recognizing that I can train emotions to show up in a moment. I don't have freedom from emotion, but I have freedom of emotion. You train yourself in just the same way in the U.S. Army trains their warriors how to perform with the smell of death on a battlefield. Okay? And it's training. You know, if you put me out in the same situation, I would fall apart. But they've trained it. They've trained how to stay calm, collective, and mindful, even on a battlefield. The same thing applies to trading, is that ultimately you probably can never afford the kind of training the U.S. Army does for their troops. But the thing is that you can train how to work with emotion, how to calm emotion, and how to call forward much more empowering emotions in moments of uncertainty. And that's what trading is all about.
So let's start with why most people don't realize this is such a challenge in the first place. So this first session, I want to just discuss and frame it with just understanding the problem so that in session two, we can start addressing how we deal with it. So if we do that, tell us how it starts to go wrong, Rand, and let's get it all out there, every single way that we step on minds.
Francis, I blame it on Rene Descartes. He's the guy many years ago that framed the quotation, "I think, therefore I am."
Yeah.
And he's the one who ushered in the age of reason. And what he also did, he separated mind from body.
Yeah.
And ultimately it caught on because it feels so good to think that your left brain is actually in control, reason. And what happens, he's never accounted that the left brain, what we know from neuroscience now, simply creates alibis, rationalizations for what the emotional brain has already said and done. So what we're doing is we're saying the moment that brain and mind got separated, there was the problem.
Yes.
And ultimately, the other thing
that
really
happened... surely the moment that mind was seen as the all-encompassing top of the pyramid that controlled everything beneath it,
yeah,
as the CPU of the computer whereby everything else followed instruction, surely that model, that top-down model of thinking also is just totally flawed in terms of who we are as people.
At the same time, the age of reason, it just made a lot of sense. And again, it goes down to that the emotion's already there. It's already triggered and is chemistry in your body in nanoseconds. Thought literally shows up about a half a second later.
Yeah,
that's really late in the world of trading. So it starts there. But what the other thing that really messes up traders is first they like to think that they don't have to have emotions, and the truth is that if you're without emotions, you don't exist.
Yeah.
Emotions literally are biological action potentials that coordinate action between you and environment. That's what they're doing. Okay. And you recognize, no, it's not like there's never a time that you're not triggering into emotion and moving in and out of emotions. The key is, how do you work with them? And what happens with most traders, They bring into trading a success paradigm that they insist on applying to trading, and it's being a winner. I'm going to make things happen. You know, I've got the mindset. I'm going to have
machismo,
a positive attitude, machismo, and look at me, look at me. And yeah, the truth is, when you're operating in a small environment, you can be a big fish and have an enormous amount of control over what happens in that environment. And humans are wired for that, okay, to control environment, to control outcome. However, in trading, the problem with trading is that no matter how big a fish you are, you're still a minnow in a vast ocean.
Yeah.
You have no power over outcome. You see that.
That's the
control.
The key point. We don't go back to how we are derived, if you can, because this is fascinating and this will bring it home for so many people where they start to understand the full essence of the problem and why you need to actively work at the solution. Is we, in the manner in which humankind attempts to avoid uncertainty or deals it when it is unavoidable, and how that undermines a trader's mindset. Can we cover that and your take?
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Back to
it
the saber-toothed tiger.
It starts about 6.5 million years ago when our ancestors were on the African savannah. Mm. And, you know, we're fairly small creatures. We're hominoids. And at that time, there are a number of lions and bears that looked at us as snacks. And ultimately, what happened from an evolutionary standpoint is that man figured out that he could look into the medium distance and look for trouble.
Yeah.
Okay? And he would assume that behind every bush there was a saber-toothed cat, when in fact there was only one out of 10,000.
Yeah.
However, it was a trait that worked and got bred into our gene pool and then bred into what we would call...
In the game of survival, the assumption of worst case scenario was always the best way for managing for uncertainty.
Absolutely. Yeah. We didn't have big teeth. We didn't have claws. We weren't fast, but we could think. We were much faster thinking. And then what ultimately came out of that was a need to control environment.
Yeah.
And a need to control outcome. And that still carries from our hominoid days to our caveman days when, again, you know, we lived in a dangerous world. You know,
so in environment, that would be like where they started to create homesteads and they cleared a clear space where they could relax and there was no tigers. There was a fence. There was a boundary. Not a fence, but a boundary of sorts, or there was a place that was regularly patrolled that had human nature, you know, fires were lit, a presence was sounded out to be afraid. And we try create that comfort zoning, because this ties into comfort zoning and avoiding risk, doesn't it, which comes in further
on. Absolutely it does. That's what we're all about. And ultimately what happens is traders – they get this heritage, this genetic heritage that is already against them in trading because you're trying to control outcome, and you're trying to control outcome in an environment that's just simply not possible. But interestingly, then we develop this notion of winner, where we have to take control, we have to do this, you know, we don't lose, whatever you do, don't lose. Yeah, Alpha and what man. Happens, again, you get into it, and that's the psychology, and all of a sudden, particularly with alphas, guys who have been successful, and women, who have been successful in corporations, successful in businesses, by, you know, being, I can make things happen. They develop this notion of being a winner. And they bring that, for a good reason, it's been successful into trading. And what they discover is different rules. You know,
wouldn't you find that in a beginner's era, just keeping tying this back to trading at each point, someone who's assumed that a market is going to behave in a certain way, let's say for simplicity's sake, go up, and has made a purchase and it's not gone up, thinking, well, I've just not tried hard enough and tried to impose his will and said, well, I'll buy even more, but I'm going to win this battle. In a very rudimentary and basic sense, they get into a minnow versus the shark or the ocean, all the contents of the ocean type situation, which they can never win.
They can never win. And they blow up. And ultimately what you see is that they've learned how to stalk and make things happen. But in trading, it's about ambush. You're an ambush predator. You wait for the forest, for the market to show you what it's willing to give. Then you take it. It's a completely different mentality.
And you determine your acceptable level of criteria and circumstances that reduce your risk, yet give you the highest probability opportunity of attaining what you need to kill as a predator in that environment. So you have, as you've described, an ideal ambush. And funny enough, as dovetails rather nicely with our market sniper branding and mentality, it's all about making sure you're safe first and surviving, choosing the circumstances. Yeah,
you're
a sniper. Choose the circumstances. Yeah, that's right.
Not in the infantry. You know, high casualties on that side of the fence, okay?
Exactly. No, you're a low efficiency.
Right. And ultimately what you do, though, is that the person gets into this thing and they keep trying to force the success formula. And that's that part of the success formula is that that persistence, that hard work, you know, push through it, you know, do everything. And what they do is they're not actually gaining and going, you know, so what am I really supposed to be learning here? And ultimately is what you learn is that you can control performance in trading. You can't control outcome. And that's the big, huge mistake that traders make. And it's the...
So define that for the differences, because some will go, how do you control performance if you can't control the outcome? They might say...
Have you got a set of rules that you're supposed to perform that if you perform these rules... It keeps you safe, and it also keeps you become a really good loser.
So is compliance to template would be that is an outcome of performance, or it's a performance outcome that you have attained. What the actual outcome in P&L is due to markets' elected actions or reactions for which you have no control will determine is a separate determinant.
If you have if your method actually gives you an edge in the market.
Yes.
Okay.
So I stop you there and say, this brings in methodology as a need. So you have to make sure that you have a combination of the beautiful soil, the best compost for your tree to grow in. Because if you aren't coming with the right emotion, you will manifest an ill tree. If you come with mercury in the soil, you'll have a poison tree that can't be consumed, the leaves can't be, etc. So you've got to come with the right emotion. But within that, there's also a need for a genuine, legitimate, long-term edge through a process, which is not individually trade significant, but which is given enough events of the trade will tend towards an outcome that is more overall aggregated wins than losses.
Absolutely. It's just like an analogy that really fits here is if you take a high-end racing car, okay, that car is capable of going 250 miles an hour. It does really wild things. However, if you put me in that car, not only would it might be dangerous, but I would never even come to the possibility that I could win a race.
I can see you burning the clutch out on the start line, Rand.
I'm sure. But if you train the brain, the race driver, suddenly mind and machine, mind and methodology weave together, and it gives you the highest probability of winning. And that's the same thing with high-end athletics like golf. Is what they know is that what they can do is they can go out and play their game. They can't control the wind. They can't control what another player's doing. There's lots of things that no matter how good you play, you may not win that day. But however, if you perform well to the top of your abilities, the opportunity is there for you to win.
Yeah.
On a higher degree than if you're having a really bad day.
If you do so consistently, there will be on occasions where you are the winner and sometimes someone else.
How many times you heard a trader say, I have my rules. The problem is I just can't follow my rules. What they're saying is that they're being hijacked either by greed, by lust, by fear, or anxiety, and suddenly they're no longer being able to replicate the standard practice of their methodology and applying it to the randomness of the markets.
And as someone who comes from a methodology point, the best methodology is not the one that's backtesting-wise could create the wildest results, but it's the one that a trader can most likely adhere to that doesn't ask too much of his limited ability to contain or manage his emotions as well.
Bingo.
Would that be accurate? In other words, it doesn't help you be...
Work together.
If you have a great methodology, that, but it requires you sitting through 60% drawdowns on your equity, but it, in the long run, tested over 10, 15 years, you know, it goes up hundreds and hundreds of percent. There's no point in it if you can't sit through the drawdowns, and that's too emotional a moment for you. And I suppose we have to bear this in mind, because this is a marriage of methodology. In some senses, we're representing two camps. I'm coming and wanting to learn more about your camp, and you're not coming from a methodology camp. You're coming from the understanding of emotions. We need something that people can emotionally comply to that gives a good outcome, rather than a great business plan or a great business model that nobody can stick to. In other words, the good one is the champion, not the great one that is impossible to abide by because of our emotional limitations. We must increase our emotional limitations in the same way you must always refine a methodology too. But there's that interesting marriage as well of can you stick to it?
Darwin never said survival of the fittest. He said the one that has the highest chance of survival is the most adaptable. If you listen to that, what you recognize, and human beings have the most highly adaptable brain there is. It is top shelf. And what you realize is that you and I as human beings and the rest of the traders, we are very different than the other cousins, our animal cousins. Everyone else has to deal with running into trouble and blowing up, and you see survival of gene pools that were able to adapt, but it's by random selection. Human beings are very different. We can be designers of the mind that we bring to uncertainty. Okay? That's the whole shooting match. And the key is to recognize that, you know, whether or not we call it neural plasticity or malleability, or whether or not we call it design, we have the capacity of designing, adapting our emotional responses to uncertainty. And that's the whole shooting game in trading. Can't overpower it, but you can adapt.
Sure.
You can adapt the winner mentality into the probability mindset. That's
what we need to do, and we need to speak more about that. But let's carry on delving in the problem. How do we undo ourselves apart from our attempt. So if I were to write down, in many of our viewers are going to be male, and I'm told men think in bullets while women like long narratives. So if we were to bulletize for our audience, problem number one may well be trying to superimpose certainty in an uncertain game, and not recognizing we can have control over our performance to an agreed methodology. We can't have control over the outcome of the performance.
Yeah, I would actually call that the problem is really one of paradigm. It's the paradigm of thinking you're in control.
Yeah.
Okay. Is you have to, and you'll see that, Francis, you see it every day. These guys say, yeah, I know I have a problem. I keep losing. I haven't done anything for a long time, but I keep finding, I'm looking for the tweak that's going to make it and bring me to the good days. And what happens is they stay there, and they truly think that I'm going to win. I've got the winner's attitude. I'm going to tough it out. They don't realize that that's the kiss of death.
Yeah.
Okay. Ultimately, the very first thing is to recognize that the paradigm you're using is not working. It's not that it's a bad paradigm. It's just that that paradigm doesn't work in this new world called trading.
Yeah. I've always suggested that a market is actually a feedback mechanism. And
yes,
actually, the charge of the light brigade into rolling machine guns is actually a futile event. And you have to recognize when the generals are giving you a certain view that is confirming the lay of the land. And once you've had a certain piece of feedback once, and then a second time and a third time, you need to be more introspective and self-aware and saying, I've gone back to the well, I'm going back to the same well, and every time it's poisoned. Maybe I should stop drinking at that well.
In trading, there is only one judge, only one criterion. It's your trading account. Yeah. It will be honest to you, no matter how much you lie to yourself, no matter how much you fall in deception, your trading account is going to tell you point blank how effective the emotional state management and beliefs that you're projecting onto the markets, how effective that mindset is for extracting capital out of the markets. If it's telling you and telling you by negative feedback, you know, something, you're losing money, it's telling you there is something inconsistent with the way of what you're projecting and the way you're engaging the uncertainty of the markets. That's what it's telling you. No matter what you may produce as an explanation, and understand, to me, when a person says, oh, well, we're rational. No, we're not. What we are is, Huxley actually said it well. He said, we are not rational animals. We are rationalized animals.
Yeah.
Ultimately, what happens is that, in more neurospeak, is that the left brain creates an alibi for what the emotional brain has already decided. That's what's
so many times.
Is.
I mean, for example, people that take an immediate liking to somebody or disliking to somebody, that is invariably it's not of a rational nature. But it has a predisposition bias that provokes an emotional response that you subsequently will then say, well, look at how he's dressed, or did you hear what he said? If you look to find something to take offense on, you will certainly find it. If you look to find reason to like a particular lady, apart from the fact she's beautiful, you will find it too. It's kind of Tony Blair and WMD. We know what we want to do, and let's get the narrative to fit that which we're going to do. And then, unfortunately, facts and other things seem to fall by the wayside in terms of their role in the narrative. And naturally, as traders, we are having Pavlovian emotional responses to a chart and saying it looks like it's going to go up. We're making a quick decision, and then we're just throwing a moving average on it and saying, wow, look, see, it's above the moving average. It's just intercepted. I should be a buyer, or whatever the case may be. Or we are finding a justification for a preconceived bias that comes from the emotional part of the brain. Which also brings us to the likes of Van Scarp and many others that have said, you don't trade what you see, you don't trade the markets, you trade what you believe about the markets. And
yeah,
systems...
I would add a qualification to that, is that ultimately what happens is what your brain's doing is taking sensorial modalities, that's your sight, that's your taste, that's all the inputs, and out of that, it's fabricating an explanation. That's a virtual representation. Literally, one day we may do this. What you discover in neurobiology, that there is no objective world out there. What there is there is a traitor embedded into a larger environment that are one and the same. Okay, it's a very interesting thing. And what you're realizing is the brain really is confabulating an explanation that it projects. Okay, and yes, it's at the core of it. It's just not your beliefs about whatever. It is your beliefs about your ability to engage uncertainty. That's the ticket. If you want the precise part, it's about the beliefs that you're engaging uncertainty with, the unknown, and what you already hold about that. Do you believe that the world's a bad place and something's going to get you? I know plenty of people who do that, and they do everything they can to not lose. And by doing that, they set themselves up for losing, because their whole organization is about not losing.
Yeah, and it's a reaffirmation of a negative. And of course, they never put themselves in an opportunity where a sensible risk can be taken so that they can win as well. So by spending an entire lifetime never winning, they have already by definition lost by just never exposing themselves to any form of risk at all. Because we would elect to expose ourselves to certain risks where the risk and the potential reward fundamentals are very positive and could lead to a positive outcome. It doesn't mean risking your life and dancing with the saber-toothed tiger. It could mean risk of, say, financial capital in a trading environment where part of the game is acknowledging a loss. Do we acknowledge loss as well in terms of how we're emotionally set up?
Not as a species, and very few of the individuals, because ultimately one of the things you start noticing is that, particularly in American culture,
is it viewed as final? Does it have a finality when you have a loss? It's kind of like, oh, you lost. You know, just to have a single trade that you closed where you didn't make money and it actually cost you money, it's almost seen as a finality. There's no changing that, and that'll always be a loss. And and people think this is now a mark on my record, and it's, you know, it's almost like you've just dropped a fly in some magical ointment, and it'll be born and worn for the rest of your life. And that people have that's created some sort of unnecessary finality about what is actually a natural mathematical event in a game of uncertainty.
And ultimately, one of the hardest things, particularly for men, to do is to acknowledge their powerlessness.
Yes.
They don't want to lose. They want to be in control. And you understand that from the heritage that we come from. You understand that we're taught, at least over here in America, we are taught to be winners and not losers. And even our educational system is about not losing. You know, you're not taught how to solve problems. You're taught how not to lose points.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately what happens is you get into trading with this trained mindset with a heritage, and you start projecting that, and it doesn't work in this new world called trading. It may work in academia. It may, you know, if you have a real alpha mentality and can control people and get people going in one direction, you may become a great salesman, a great marketer, a great business owner. But you're still a big fish in a small pond. You come to trading, and suddenly you come face to face with your powerlessness. And it's the hardest thing in the world. And you realize, I really don't have control. What I have control over me.
So can we say, in our list of mistakes, our ability to try be alpha in an environment where we are minnows, micro minnows, in the great ocean of trading, is another great failing. So if we're reducing, if we're searching out these bullets that are the reasons why this is such a difficult emotional game to get right and why we need emotional work. Because in my conclusion, this is definitely the conclusion I've come to with our discussions together. We actually need to be active day-to-day trading in emotional management, because it's the soil from which all plants grow and the outcomes thereof. And if it isn't, if it doesn't well fested and understood. So we try to assert ourselves in something that we have no control over.
Yep.
What else? And, what else do we do?
And it gives us feedback. And understand, it gives you feedback in terms of losses or stagnancy in your trading account.
Would it not also be that people see trades as individual trades as being too much an entire win or lose outcome itself, when meanwhile it is just a pebble in the cobblestone of the entire trading process? And the fact that it comes out a black or a white one or a red or a green one is largely immaterial if the process is taking you in the road or the direction you want. And people should recognize losses as literally just a feedback mechanism, either on the methodology or your emotional ability to implement that methodology, or just part of what was. In that every methodology is not going to yield only winners anyway. So if you've done everything right. So surely as a post-mortem effect with a trader, he should assess whether every time he's had a loss, whether he's complied to methodology, whether he's had an emotional failure and not complied to methodology for whatever reason, and then assess if the methodology is, he has the weatherall within him to comply to the methodology. In other words, the methodology may be too challenging. Or the third one, the methodology is good and the compliance to the trade was good, and it just was that event where you lose because you don't have a 100% winner. In which case, set it aside and put on your next trade, your one trade closer to your next winner.
Yeah, it's about performance, not winning. I have another way of framing that, particularly with young traders when I'm first starting working with them, is that when they take a loss, there are three questions. Is this a method mistake? Okay. The second one is this a psychological mistake? And the third one is, or is this just simply landing on the wrong side of probability?
Yeah.
If you're in a situation where you go, no, I'd take the same trade over again, it met my criterion, it's just that it didn't work out. What you're doing, you're saying, I'm now rewarding myself for my performance and not for whether or not I won or lost. And I don't even want to be honest with you, I have plenty of guys who put tape over their P&L statements in the moment, because I don't want them looking at P&L in the moment. What I really want them to do is focus on performance. Is that if you perform...
It's something I've heard so many times. Sorry to cut in again, but people trade their P&Ls, don't they? In other words, they watch it because they think that's the bottom line. And, you know, you never go bust if you're not watching the bottom line. And instead of trading the methodology and getting a real feedback as to whether the methodology is A, worth its weight and will long run succeed by giving it enough sessions and a decent sample set of trades and emotionally implementing it, they just trade the current P&L. And if they get fear, and that will promote the fight and flight in them, because it's the green and the suddenly turning to red numbers, et cetera, that'll just go, oh my God, we've had an adverse event. And this is something that hasn't come out in this discussion, but we've spoken out on another discussion. So I'm just going to take you in a certainly different direction. People's physiological response to events that are entirely different. One, the appearance of the saber-toothed tiger as the barbarian who lives in the cave, at the mouth of his cave, and how that promotes flight or flight, versus, aka, the discomfort of an unpleasant market move on your P&L in your trading environment. Two totally different events. One, life-threatening, which justifiably requires your fight and flight response. You know, you either got a safe corner to back into and you've got a long spear and you can jab and you can back up and try hoard the predator off, or you can run in and climb up some place that he won't be able to follow you, aka fight or flight. In trading, how is it correct that we still have the same physiological responses and that the fight and flight response is supportive in case A, the predator, and highly non-supportive and, in fact, physiologically depletive in case B. Is that a correct summary?
Well, I have a different way of explaining that, Francis, is that the brain cannot tell the difference between biological threat and psychological discomfort. Okay?
Yes. Love that. And so I'm going to stop you and I'm going to repeat that because I really want these points to come from. I know this is so inside you and you can just go off. So the brain cannot differentiate. People need to realize when trading that the brain cannot differentiate between biological threat and psychological discomfort.
Cannot. And there needs to be a bit of teasing and explanation there. Is I use the concept of the triune mind where you've got brainstem, you have the midbrain, it's the limbic system, the emotional brain, and the cerebral cortex, which is thinking brain. Okay? And fundamentally what's happening, what flows into the brainstem is all this information. The first stop is the limbic system and the amygdala and the hippocampus within that. And it's deciding to whether or not to go to the low road, react immediately in nanoseconds, or send it up to the high brain for thought. Okay?
Process. Yeah.
What happens when you're the other piece, it's the emotional brain triggers, and understand it's triggering in nanoseconds, 0.005 of a second. It's already triggered, and the chemistry of the emotion is in your system.
Yes.
It's that fast. And out of emotion comes action.
Yes.
Period. There's no thought. It is straight from emotion to action. What happens is the thought shows up half a second later, and what you've done is the emotional brain has already interpreted it as threat.
Yes.
It doesn't know any difference. It's still back in the cave. Okay?
Yes.
And ultimately, in trading, the whole deal is to recognize that you have to interrupt that process or you don't have a chance. Okay.
So can I say, in the assumption, the correct assumption for everybody generally is that we have a primitive emotional brain in terms of how it recognizes to respond to the differences between a biological threat and psychological discomfort. It will respond in the same way because that's how it's been trained. In other words, the period of us being civilized or having activities such as trading has been so short, and the history
about
150
generations.
Yeah, and the history of risk, of threat in life has been so extended that we carry in our forefathers' DNA genes, Pavlovian responses, however you want to phrase it, a primitive and basic emotional response to mm-hmm. both those particular triggering
and
events.
We're prone,
one being supportive and one being negative.
And we are prone to interpret it negatively.
Yes.
That's the big deal. It's like whether or not it's not getting into a trade because you're scared you may lose. You know, the negative interpretation's already there. If you're in a trade and it's going against you and you go mad, crazy, berserk, what happens is the same thing, is it's prone to see the negative and react to that. And it, in that case, it becomes like a horse in a burning barn. So the thing is, but you're not damned if you do, damned if you don't. It is really coming to the point where you have to wake up as a designer, as an observer of your human experience, and recognize that the mind that you inherited is just simply not going to work in trading.
Correct.
It can be redesigned. And when you read about all those glorious guys who, well, he just went in and started making millions of dollars, he did this and the other. First of all, there are very few of those.
Yeah.
There are very few of those guys. Most of the guys who are making really good money have been around for a number of years, and they have
yes.
gone through their trials and tribulations, okay, and have spent
Agreed.
Hundreds, if not millions of dollars learning how to trade.
Yep.
And some of them have come to trading with a genetic quirk. Diagnostically, we often call it high-functioning autism, where we do not have the same emotional architecture that typical people have. And you will see those guys get in and they just don't have the fear response the way we do.
fancy way of saying psychopaths who just have an ideal quirk.
Those are high functioning autistic. No, I'm kidding. Psychopaths I'm kidding. Make very good market makers.
Yeah,
they're the ones who have this. And I once worked with a trader. He says, "Randy, I trade blood. I'm looking for the blood. I know that when these people get caught in this area, I know how easy it is to extract capital out of them." Now, he's a psychopath, and he's I wouldn't call him a psychopath. He's a cold-blooded killer, and he understands the game where he can move money, and he can create moments where people get scared, and he can take advantage of that, or people get greedy, and they take advantage of that. And he's part of the game at the high end that
But that is methodology in a way. It ties into methodology. Sorry, there's a slight delay on the line. But in some senses, he's waiting for the extreme moments where there's blood in the streets to be the buyer, or where there's utter exuberance, unfounded exuberance to be the seller. So this is somebody who has gone for a methodology of trade the extremes in the reversal direction. And that is in essence a methodology, but it's a methodology that preys on the emotional sentiments of the crowd. So the emotion comes in the typical human behavior of fear of missing out in the dot-com melt-up run, and they all charging in to buy, and the absolute misery and depression of the 2009 bottoms where everyone thinks the world's going to end. So he recognizes that.
George Soros made $2 billion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He smelled it.
Yeah, yeah, the pain. Very good. So how, given that most people are what I'd call in the category of normal and have what we call, are not this gifted autistic slight right. element where they've already very emotionally dispassionate, passionate generally as individuals and very in control of their emotions, this rare person, many people that don't start with that, and there's many traders that have been very successful that have done outrageous things in failing and blowing their accounts up first in their
Absolutely.
Formative year, and let's assume most people fall into this ordinary normal distribution of this of emotionality. What else do they do that's wrong? And when we have our second session, we will discuss how we fix it. But how do these people blow themselves up? And what else do they need to know about understanding? And something else that you touched on before in previous conversations, which was a great distilling point that I'd like to have you describe again. Tell us also how your physiological responses, once that initial assessment, that is the fastest assessment that recognizes fear of and fight and flight, how physiologically it already reduces your ability to intervene rationally and reframe what is a discomfort event rather than a life-threatening event. What goes on in your brain physiologically? And you said a lot of interesting things about glucose and blood. And why afterwards, when we do a post-mortem, there's always that, what was I thinking? I would never have normally done that. It was a different person that was just... in a panic right. state, because this many people experience that as traders, that they have an event, they take a course of action when they're under duress, and then a review subsequently later sees them disgusted with self.
Yeah, the key that people don't grasp is that emotions are biological. They are not psychological. They take over psychology.
Let's say that again, because I love the master of repeat, because that's a real, real gem that all the traders need to hear. Your emotions are biological. Biological. In other words, your stuff, your body, your molecules, your brain, your emotions are biological, not psychological. In other words, when there's a reason why we say you feel emotion. Because it's in your biology. You feel nauseated when you see something of distaste. You feel greedy and hyped and ready and aggressive when you see something you like that you want to pursue. It is a biological response. Emotions provoke biological response. Sorry for that anecdote, but carry on, because that was gem and it's straight out.
Yeah, the main thing is emotions are biological, not psychological. They take over psychology. And ultimately, if you grasp that, what you go is go, I need to start looking at my body. And what I literally will have traders either having a video feed watching themselves, And a lot of it,
you're watching, I guess.
A lot of it is like facial recognition, the stuff that really powerful stuff. You're looking for micro expressions, or you're looking at what the body's doing. Now, we'll also have traders have a mirror so that they can kind of check in on themselves. And what you're looking for is, where are you carrying tension in your body? And most traders,
the traps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what you discover is that then you're asking the question, how are you breathing? What most traders will discover is they're not breathing at all. They're doing a lot of holding their breath, or they're breathing
top
just
third, no, top third, top third minor breaths, I guess.
Yeah. Now, what happens, you are looking at emotional arousal when you're looking at that. It's not tension in your body. It's emotional arousal. The emotion has been triggered.
And it's showing biologically. And the emotion that has triggered the biological response is hijacking the psychological.
Yeah. By the way, you're getting feedback in your mic.
Yeah.
You got that? Okay. But yeah, the point is that the triggering of the emotion happens. And this is when beginning to develop an understanding of emotion is there's the triggering, and then it starts ramping up. That's when you start feeling the tension. That's when you hold your breath. And that is the moment where you have to train yourself to interrupt the emotion. Okay? You have to, and you know, I teach diaphragmatic breathing and muscle tension relaxation, where literally the emotion cannot maintain itself if you are to take away the tension and you would start breathing diaphragmatically. Most don't even know that, they don't connect that the emotional arousal includes breathing, includes tension in the body, heart rate. They don't monitor for that. And what they do is that it ramps up, and there's a switch that goes on, Francis, where the emotion revs up, hits a particular no-go point, and suddenly the emotion is no longer revving up, but it's flooding in the body as chemistry. That's your cortisol, that's your testosterone, and it's running through your body, and that's when your mind is corrupted.
So we have a natural limiter, which is almost like a thermostat, and then once you go beyond that, that's when we get overspill into what will eventually affect brain function.
It's an emotional hijacking at that moment.
Yeah.
And
trading typically triggers this, as we can see. And the beginning evidence of that is hyperbiological reactions. In other words, carrying tension in your back like this, staring fanatically at a particular quote screen.
It's called fixation. You see traders just like this.
Yeah, yeah. Staring, tense, shallow breathing. How many times have you caught yourself breathing really shallow and watching something and just going, feeling a bit, you know, you almost need that sigh to just reoxygenate and release some form of inherent energy. That is all biology that's been hijacked by an emotion. You need that sigh. Absolutely. Okay. And we'll talk, as I say, I think this will come in our second one about the remedy in this. And there is a remedy, guys. We're not just going to sit here and talk about how it all goes wrong and leave you high and dry. The main purpose behind doing session one and just understanding the full extent of the problem is, A, you realize how much this needs work. Then we will come to you with how to manage that. But if we don't fully explore and recognize that, and part of the solution then, Rand, correct me if inaccurate, is we need to have a higher mindfulness, what I'd call self-awareness, and you refer to as mindfulness, where you sort of almost astrally are looking down at your current self, seeing the top of your head, and I'm seeing a funny brown flat cap, and I'm watching that my hands are clutching the table like this, like a hawk hanging on to a tree branch in a storm, and my eyes are big, and I'm tense, and I'm barely breathing, and my body is still, and I'm absolutely single-minded, fascinated, and saying, hey, calm down, breathe. You're having a biological response to an emotion that has been triggered by a discomfort that's been created on a P&L. This is all part of a process. And the only way that you deal with this process well is you manage emotions to it. And by straight away breathing and bringing back normality into everything, which, as I say, we'll get into a lot more, which involves far more than just breathing, but breathing is part of it. You get a normalization, first of all. As you called it, I think it was triage. You stop the bleeding because you're already in a hemorrhage situation, and you have to first stop the breathing. You're not done yet with recovering the situation, but you stop the breathing. As I say, one for next time. But you also mentioned when we spoke about it is that glucose and oxygen, your body, because it's having a fight or flight response, is driven from the cerebral cortex in the front into the muscles. Because you might need, your body is preparing for hurdling the fence to escape the saber-tooth tiger because of the lack of ability to differentiate between the two threats. One, a psychological discomfort in move on a P&L, the other being the predator at the cave entrance. And that very function is part of why when we retrospectively, once in a normalized state, and we're emotionally coping with the fact that we've just shot a hole in the bottom of the boat or stabbed ourselves in the foot, and we're looking at in the cold light of the day, that we go, what on earth was I thinking? You were in a diminished state biologically as well, aren't you? Is that a correct statement?
You're in an altered state based on the emotion rather than... The point is, you're always in an emotion. The thing is, though, is what are you in an anxious emotion? Are you in an angry emotion? Are you in an emotional state that would be characterized as disciplined patience? Those are all emotional states. And what happens is it causes a different way of interpreting the world around you, depending on that. And they're emotional programs. You know, they're there. They're built into our genome.
So for those listening, I really want them to write that down. You were given the three brain states there. The one you want to write down is not anxious. It's not anger. It is disciplined patience. Pen and paper at hand. Write that down. What is my mental state? How am I in my emotional state, which is so critical? Am I in an emotional state of disciplined patience? He says, writing it down. Disciplined patience. That's my take. And my handwriting and scrawl next to a funny quote of a funny lady, but it's going up there and it's got to go on the side screen. Are there any other states of mind that are supportive?